Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. Today we talk about homelessness in New Mexico with someone who has seen it from both sides. Years ago, our guest, Dr. Jeremy Reynolds, was himself homeless. Later, he founded and is currently the CEO of our largest emergency shelter, Joy Junction. Dr. Jeremy Reynolds, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. And I like your alliteration, too. What is it? People, places, and...
That's right.
That's really good. You could be somebody behind the pulpit.
My wife is to credit for that.
It's very good.
So I'd like to spend most of our time learning about homelessness. And I know you've written numerous books on homelessness. And I'd also like to learn a lot more about Joy Junction.
Sure.
But a fascinating aspect of your story is that you yourself... were homeless, and I'd like to learn a little bit more about you, and I can almost tell right away from your accent that you're really not originally from New Mexico.
I'm from Texas. No, I'm kidding. I'm not really. I'm from jolly old England and came across to the U.S. back in 1978 when I was 20 with, get this, $50 in my pocket and a one-way ticket. That was all I had. That was in the days also when Air Florida ran from Orlando, Miami to Orlando. Cost you $20 to get from Miami to Orlando.
No kidding.
But 4 years later, after meeting my ex-wife back in the end of 1981 and 82, this middle-class young man from England, whose parents were very nice, but were very middle-class English.
So you were well-educated?
But I didn't plan, of course, on being homeless. I felt like God wanted me to come to the States. I wanted to minister. Didn't know what or how. So
you felt a calling.
Yes, exactly. But, of course, I didn't know that it takes a long time to build a business, to build a ministry. I figured, hey, I'm here. And people in the States are going, okay, so what? And, well, I'm here. They're going, okay, we're here. And long story short, of course, people can find out more about me on online also. The end of 1981, we got kicked out of our house and not paying the rent. Because we didn't have the rent to pay, because I wasn't working much. And 1982, some friends said to my ex-wife, well, we'll take care of you and the kids, but that Jeremy, he needs to, like, find his own place and find his own way in life. So, you know, I ended up on the corner, and I get this, Steve, of New Mexico and Texas. Back then, Steve, I didn't even know what New Mexico was. It could have been anywhere. I didn't think it was in Mexico, but I didn't know where it was. There is nothing more scary. Just imagine you have $14 or $15 in your pocket, okay? Maybe that's more than you have. Maybe that's more than I have. But across the road, you see a hotel. And it says maybe $15 or $16. But the price of the hotel was a dollar or two more than I had in my pocket. It was cold. Big trucks were going by me on the highway. I was scared. I was scared.
I can imagine you would be.
And, you know, it was getting late, and I had my thumb out, didn't do anything. And it got later and later and later. And, you know, across the road from where I was, there was a restaurant. And the restaurant closed. It was about 9 o'clock at night. And they had, like, a little shed or a shack behind. It had a piece of fiberglass in it. That was my bed that night. Just the one night, that was my bed. Can you ever imagine sleeping on a fiberglass mattress?
No.
Well, the next morning... after I got through that.
How old were you at this time?
I was 20.
20.
And should have known better, but, you know, I was, you know, I think women say that men mature later than women, right? I was slow to mature. but a few months later, you know, I got through that, and I ended up in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And by the summer, I had gotten some brains and made up my mind to say, you know, it's not going to be what I want. I'm going to take care of my wife and kids, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get back on my feet again. So I found a wonderful pastor up there who had a calling to help young men, even silly young men like me who wanted to help people. I ended up opening up a ministry on Lower Alafria called His Place Coffee House. That was in the days of coffee houses. You probably remember those, right?
Sure, yes. And I used to go to one.
Right, yeah, and me, and it was fun. And became quite fast, became a place for the homeless to hang out. Then we gave them a bed to stay, or a bed in which to sleep at night. In 4 years, it became the only place, you know, for the homeless in Santa Fe. But in 4 years, I had 4 days off, only 4 days off, and got two front teeth punched out by a drunk. And then we heard about this property in Southwest Albuquerque, which had been a Catholic charismatic place for the homeless, for alcoholics and drug addicted, for about 10 or 12 years. They closed down, and the property was vacant. It was a 71 or 72-acre property. So just think of this, Steve. I found out who owned it. By this time, I said, okay, God, I'll do whatever you want.
Can I interrupt you
for
1 second?
Yeah, please do, because I tend to ramble.
Before we get to Joy Junction, and I think that's where you're leading to,
yes.
I think a lot of people would like to know what it's actually like to be homeless.
It's scary. Again, you feel like you have failed. And so after I spent
How do you find a safe place? If you don't have shelter, how do you find a safe place to sleep?
Well, I didn't know any of that. You can find a mission, you know, like we run. But I was determined. I was scared of a mission. And so after the night I spent, you know, on the fiberglass mattress, I thought, what do I do now? So I kept on hitchhiking.
So we're going to take a short break, Jeremy, and then we're going to be back. And I want to talk to you about the founding of Joy Junction,
absolutely,
which we approached earlier.
Whether it's politics, Native culture, or entertainment, the news stories that impact Native communities are what you hear on Native America Calling. Join us as we bring you the nation's first and only electronic talking circle, Native America Calling, from Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
We are back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm here with Dr. Jeremy Reynolds. Jeremy Reynolds was himself homeless for a period, and he alluded to the fact earlier in our conversation that he saw a place that I think turns out to be Joy Junction. I'm guessing it was. You end up founding Joy Junction, and just in the interest of time, what I'd like to do is kind of skip forward and have you tell me, because I know you're currently the CEO.
Yes.
Tell me about what's currently going on at Joy Junction.
So our focus was, let's keep the family together. Because just picture, Steve, and all our listeners, you think also, if you were homeless, again, you would have all those feelings I had, frightened, weary, depressed, maybe you'd be having spats with your wife, husband, significant other too. Then you get to your friendly neighborhood mission. And the mission says, either have a marriage license, be married, or you're separated. Or even if you have all those, they may not have space for you to stay. So what I thought I should do was have a place for the homeless to stay where husbands and wives, families and kids could be kept together, Steve, at one of the, if not the worst point in time in their entire life. That was to help them get back on their feet.
So when you
quicker.
Say kept together, I mean, there's communal, at Joy Junction now, there's communal sleeping, I assume, just separate. Women and men are separate in communal sleeping arrangements. No?
No, we keep families together.
You do keep them together.
Husbands, wives, and kids, men, significant others, and kids.
Do they have a separate room? Or?
Some have a separate room. Others have double mats. Of course, we just started to construct a 52-unit apartment complex, which will be really, really cool. It'll be done in about four or 5 months. But again, the keystone or the capstone of what we do, again, is keeping the entire family together and not taking any government money.
So yeah, and why is that? Because, well, first of all, government money can sometimes be unreliable, but it's there, right?
It comes to strings also. And because the government is notoriously fickle, you know, say you were the guy from the government. I wouldn't insult you by saying that, but say you were.
I'm willing to be a guy from the government.
Okay. And so you may like a particular way of helping the homeless get back on their feet this year, but then somebody else comes into power, and the people who succeed you don't like it. So what you got the money for a particular program may not be in favor two or three years after.
So this really doesn't. Now you have a religious bent. I know that.
We do. We do.
But the decision not to take government money doesn't have anything to do with that.
It does to some extent. We didn't want to be like a test case, you know, for the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State or the ACLU. That's why we sort of thought, well, we won't take any government money, and because it's very important to us. If you are perchance an alcoholic, if you have drug issues, if you have other issues, and we say, Steve, your life's a mess, and you're thinking, well, I know that anyway, thank you very much for nothing. We're saying you have to give up drinking. You have to give up drugs. Well, you know what? You started to overindulge or imbibe in ways you shouldn't with drugs and alcohol because your life was a mess and because you were miserable. You wanted to escape from the hellacious existence that was your life. You didn't do it because really you wanted to. You just wanted some escape and relief. So if you come to me and I say, Steve, give that up, I have to give you something to replace that, right?
Yes.
Otherwise, you're going to be right back where you are.
I mean, I think if you're homeless, you're sort of at the bottom of the hope in terms
bottom of the
barrel. How do you get your life back?
So what we do is we present Jesus to them, say, you don't need to drink, don't need to drug. Here is your replacement therapy. Enter into a relationship with Jesus. We encourage cooperation with mental health professionals, with the VA.
When you say encourage, do you have those on staff? Or are there wraparound services, or do people have to go outside the campus?
We have a chaplain and a case manager on staff, plus we have 24-hour staff also.
I see.
And so that's what we do. So we also run a life recovery program, which is faith-based. We call it basically like a Jesus-ized version of AA. Mm-hmm. And so we have these folks who are really serious and really able to get back on their feet, and they enroll. They make a commitment for 9 months. The first month, they have to stay on property to cut ties with all of the bad colleagues or bad friends they have prior. And they do volunteer things. They have class every day or class 5 days a week.
So it's a nine-month commitment. To get through this program. You don't buy religion. But you want hope. You're trying to better your life.
You can still come. You can still come, and we do mandate you attend two or three services a week, because basically it's a lot of the faith-based community and others that fund us, and we feel we have the best answer. But we take you in regardless, you know, religion, race, color, creed, you know, whatever you are, we will take you in regardless and say, you know what, Steve. God loves you. We love you. Albuquerque cares for you. And this is a great place. We have generous people that fund us 24/7 because we couldn't survive without the community to help you get back on your feet. And you know, every night we shelter as many as 300 people. And between that and our mobile feeding unit, we feed in excess of about 16,000 meals each month. We also have a mobile feeding unit, which goes from southeast Albuquerque to southwest Albuquerque, giving out snacks, burritos, hot dogs, Cokes, hygiene items, and all sorts of stuff. This is to build relationships with people who are not necessarily ready to take the recovery plunge, but to build a relationship of trust with them. So when they are, they've got all those folks at Joy Junction helps us.
I've always wondered about this. Why do people choose not to go to missions or choose not to go to Joy Junction or, you know, St. Martin's or whatever?
Or the Rescue Mission. Sure. Because we have structure. And because you can't drink on site.
I see.
You can't take drugs on site.
So if you're going to continue drinking and taking drugs, you know you can't go to those places.
Absolutely. But, of course, we will always give you a meal. Because we feel it's every person's right to have a meal. And we go to some of the various motels up and down Central, all in Albuquerque. We even go to the Pajarito Mesa, and we feed good meals. We give out hygiene packs. Just think, Steve, there are a number of motels here in Albuquerque. If you go to a motel, you and your wife, what's something that you expect?
I expect one of the things I expect are all the stuff you get in a shower.
Yeah.
And I get, you know, soap, shampoo, toiletries.
Guess what? Some of the motels in Albuquerque with a dirt cheap bottom rate, you have to pay extra for toilet paper. There's no hygiene.
Toilet paper?
Yes, sir. I've seen it happen once. You have to pay extra for hygiene items. So there are many people, folks, so please don't judge them. There are many people who have to make a daily choice in between having a meal or having a place to stay. They may be inebriated. They may be drugged out. And some people think you shouldn't feed people that are in that state. But my question to them is, we need to feed people. We need to keep them alive long enough so with your help we can get them back on their feet so ultimately they can become productive, contributing members of mainstream community life.
So we're going to take another short break, and we'll be back in 30 seconds. We are back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have in the studio Dr. Jeremy Reynolds.
I'm pleased to be here.
Dr. Reynolds has written numerous books on homelessness, and he's also the founder and CEO of Joy Junction, which, as he says, has up to 300 guests a night. They feed and clothe and work with these people, trying to get them back into their life. And I guess one of the things I'd like to learn from you is just more of a sort of a description of the various categories of homeless people, because, I mean, you were a youth and when you were homeless. You were a young person.
I was a baby, young, obnoxious Englishman.
Yeah. And that's actually not so atypical. There are a lot of homeless youth. There's a lot of different categories. I wonder if you could describe some of the different categories and just maybe the percentage of how many homeless people are families, how many are single people, how many are over 50. I mean, what about all these? How many are youth? How many are disabled? How many are drug and alcohol addicted? Just give us some kind of sense.
Well, it's a yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
There are obviously a high number of people that are homeless that have drug and alcohol problems. But you can become homeless also.
Majority, would you say?
More than likely. People may quibble with me on that. But probably, you know, if you were to lose your job, your pension, the economy was to go wackadoodle, you know, you probably wouldn't be homeless.
Yeah, I mean, there's financial. We've heard about this repeatedly in the United States now. There are people living on the edge of poverty.
Absolutely.
And if their car breaks down.
Yes. It can make a major dent.
They get divorced, et cetera.
Divorce can
become homeless.
Put you there.
Right.
But again, a major number would be due to drug and alcohol issues. Some will be due to domestic violence. It's very important to remember this. We talk a lot about our veterans because we're here in essence because they fought for us. But
yeah.
Some of the vets, when
and
they come back.
I've read as many as 10% of the homeless population are
some
veterans.
Some of the vets, when they come back, have terrible, terrible issues like post-traumatic stress. And folks, there is no way these folks feel they can withstand the rigors, you know, of going to an agency. So they become homeless on the streets. Folks, we can do better for our vets. We really can. And then, of course, I've been reading quite a high number of LGBTQ.
Yeah, LGBTQ.
Yeah, LGBTQ. Yes. Some of these kids become homeless.
And you welcome these people to Joy Junction?
We have some transgender folks staying with us also.
I see.
And so the parents, they come out, so they reveal, you know, their preference to their parents, and their parents go, not in my house, out. So it's awful. These folks become homeless. These kids become homeless. So there's a wide variety of reasons for people becoming homeless. But it's interesting. HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, does what's called a yearly PIT count. Stands for a point-in-time count. And I believe they said in the whole state of New Mexico, for last year or year before, there were like 1,800 homeless people in New Mexico. Nonsense. You know, Albuquerque Public Schools has a different count. You know what the estimate, Steve, is of homeless kids in Albuquerque? You know the estimate?
I have no idea.
Upwards of 4,000 homeless kids.
That's shocking.
4,000 homeless kids.
So how do these kids get to school if they're homeless?
They could be staying in a motel, you know, in the bus service. And, of course, the teacher gets to know them well because maybe she asks an innocent question and the teacher's going, Miss, you know, whatever, my mommy or daddy is homeless.
Yeah.
And so that way they can help them more. But there are a high number. We have a high number of homeless people in Albuquerque. Do we have time also, Steve? I know we're coming to the end of our time to address the panhandling issue really quickly.
I want to talk to you about that because, first of all, it just strikes me anecdotally that my wife and I are people who like to go downtown.
Yes.
And it just seems like there are more and more homeless people downtown. There's more and more panhandlers. And one of the questions we always have is, should we give them money or should we just give our, you know, send a check to a homeless shelter, which is what we tend to do?
Well, what we do, and we thank you for that, and all the other agencies do as well. Firstly, folks, we urge you, do not judge the homeless. Everybody, all of us, Steve, you have a story. I have a story. My wife, Alma, has a story. We all have things that we may look healthy, but maybe there's reasons that we can't work. Those panhandlers who many of you judge have a story as to why they can't work. And just to say we want to help them, it doesn't make it. But so if you want to help them out, first you can direct them to us, 1-800-924-0569. Now, my wife and I also carry fast food gift cards for $5 a piece in the car. If we see a panhandler who's whom we're motivated to give, we figure $5 will get them a hamburger, fries, and a cup of coffee. Some people also carry bottles of water, nuts, granola bars, raisins, you know, even hygiene items. That is a great thing to give them. As a rule,
those are wonderful suggestions.
As a rule, unless you feel specifically motivated, we would discourage you from giving money. If you feel like, well, that's what you should do, well, then by all means do it. Of course, we'll also take a check from you as well. But I want folks to know, please investigate the homeless in a good sense. Please, and also, something you can do for them, which maybe this should be the takeaway from this show. You go, well, I can't afford $5 gift cards. I can't afford a bottle of water. Okay. Do you know what the homeless maybe lack most? Hopefully folks will remember this. Human contact.
Yeah.
So if you're going on the highway, you're downtown, if you feel okay and you feel safe, extend a hand, even smile, just to raise your eyebrows or just to make some sort of contact with them. That could very well be, and doing that is free, that could very well be the first stage in somebody getting back on their feet again. And if you go downtown,
welcoming somebody back to society.
Yes, it makes them feel they matter.
So before we end the show, I want to talk to you just a little bit about, it seems like the homeless population is increasing. That's just my impression.
Your impression's right.
So what should we be doing? Is that because Albuquerque's doing something right? Is Albuquerque doing something right? Is the nation as a whole doing something right? I mean, you see all these websites, end homelessness. That seems to me pretty hopeless. I don't think we're ever going to end hopeless. But what should we be doing in terms of public policy, nationally or locally, to decrease the number of homeless people, decrease the time they're homeless?
Realize that the NIMBY, have you ever heard of NIMBY, Steve?
Yes, I have.
Not in my backyard. Realizing that shuffling the homeless on from 1st Street to 6th Street to 10th Street isn't going to work. Homelessness is our responsibility, not just the government's, state government, federal government, city government's responsibility. It's our responsibility. Folks, we will never, ever, 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 ever end homelessness as a whole, but we can end homelessness one life at a time. We can end hunger one meal at a time. And recognize that as a civilized, caring community, shuffling the homeless on down the road, folks, it don't work. I know it's bad grammar, but it don't work.
So I've been sort of impressed with two of Mayor Barry's programs. The program, but you know, I'd like to get your take on them. There's one program where they offer people that are, you know, at the freeway entrances, a job for $9 an hour to help pick up trash. There's another. I think he calls it Heading Home, where the most vulnerable people are put into homes. And the sort of the whole message of the anti-homelessness people seems to be, if you're trying to end homelessness, what these people need are homes. There's not enough housing. That's the public policy that we should be engaging in. Now, I apologize. That's a multiple question.
It's a multiple question. Firstly, let's deal. There's another part you didn't talk about. Our town is littered with coal 311 signs.
Yes.
Call 311. Useless, folks. Don't do them. They're open 6 days a week from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. The operators are not trained. Call us instead or call another mission, 1-800-924-0569. The operators are great folks. 311 is a great service, but they don't help the homeless. The thing that the mayor does of putting homeless folks to work, I have some issues with. I know we only have time maybe deal with one. As far as I know, these folks are not background checked. Very, very dangerous. And, of course, as you know, Steve, our city has experienced many suits. The Risk Management Fund has paid out millions of dollars.
Right.
Folks, this is a disaster waiting to happen. Because sooner or later, if you don't background check people, say you're on the program.
You said you yourself were, I assume, attacked by someone when you were working in Santa Fe.
I was. I had my two front teeth punched out by a drunk. But you folks, you have to background people. I made numerous attempts to contact the mayor's office to ask why they don't do this. There has been no answer. The disturbing case about this program, inasmuch as to do something, I guess, is better than nothing, the disturbing case is that the national press has taken it up, has portrayed Albuquerque as being a model place. People
That's
think
right.
Albuquerque is doing wonderful, wonderful things. the mayor is making a very, very small dent in a very, very huge issue.
So and how do we make a bigger dent? I mean, that's the, you know, I know you are doing your part.
If we look at the enormity of the issue, we see all these homeless people, we see panhandlers, we see drunks, we hear all these folks are homeless, the issue is not going away. We have to take it again, as I said, one person at a time, one life at a time. You can do certain things. Myself and my wife can do certain things. But if we look at all the homeless in Albuquerque, all the homeless in New Mexico, all the homeless in the U.S., we go, oh my goodness, the problem is so big, it's so overwhelming, there's no way. Correct. You do what you can within your sphere of influence. Smile, buy a meal, give a gift card, say a prayer, support an agency, go down and volunteer. You do what you can. If we all did a little bit, we took some of what we had and did a little bit with that, the problem, I believe, would be would go down a whole lot.
So, you know, I sort of hear your maybe anti-government or non-government sort of point of view coming out.
Yes.
But it seems to me that the problem's big enough that we, you know, we need more public housing. We don't need to cut back on Medicaid, either federally
I couldn't agree more.
Or state.
I could, yes.
Yeah.
Sadly,
and so it seems to me almost that things are going in the wrong direction in terms of helping the homeless.
Things are going totally in the wrong direction. I think we both heard the same newscast. You know, Medicaid, there's proposals to cut Medicaid back. I've heard the SNAP program is going to be cut
back. That's right.
That will make things even worse. They're not good now. That is a move in the wrong direction. I'm not particularly pro-government, but I strongly believe in the value of Medicaid and in the value of...
Because that provides behavioral health services,
absolutely,
addiction counseling, et cetera, et cetera.
If we cut that back, folks, we are making a bad problem dangerously worse.
Well, I'm sorry to say we're going to have to leave it there. I would like to thank my guest today so much, Dr. Jeremy Reynolds.
Can we just give our website real quick?
Sure.
It's joyjunction.org, and you can get in touch with all our social media channels also. We'd love you to sign up, of course, and you can also listen to Steve Spitz every month on KUNM.
And I'd also like to thank my engineer, Roman Garcia, the executive producer of this show.
We couldn't do it without him, could we?
The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Steven Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are downloadable at iTunes. Search Steven Spitz. Archives of my past shows are at stevenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.